You are listening to Punk News Podcast, episode 615. Let's go!
When you wanna tune in, cause you need to tune out, put on Ben FM and turn it up loud. Phil Collins and Turtledean Blossoms are a few of the choice selections that they'll play for you. 94.7, 24.7, an infinite playlist, every true heaven from that frequency, from the drums in my trunk. Radio with no rules, cause I'm tired of punk. They play whatever they want. We play whatever we want. They play whatever they want. We play whatever we want. Ha!
And it's the Punk News Podcast. And we've got kind of a slimline show for you today, but a lot of stuff is up and coming, and I'm going to talk about some random stuff. But before I do that, we're here with M. Moore. M. Moore, what's happening in the exciting world of EM up in the CA?
In the ON, there's so much going on. It's a nonstop like circus line. That's not the right like word, but you know when you see, like, I guess it's more of a parade. Yeah, let's go with a parade. It's a parade of beavers and moose and geese and assorted leaves and things, and several labor disputes. Yeah.
Have you ever seen a moose up close?
From afar. Like, I've seen it in person, but it wasn't like in my face. I think that would be absolutely horrifying.
They're so much bigger than you think they might. Well, actually, I guess they're not bigger than Em might think they are because she lives in Canada. But Hallie, have you ever seen a moose? I saw a moose once in Colorado, and it was so much bigger than I thought it would be. It was massive. Massive.
I also saw a moose in Colorado. It was totally massive. My friend did one of those, like, outward bound kind of things and woke up in her sleeping bag. Like, they make you go on, like, a solo part of your journey when you do those. And she was, like, on her solo leg of her trip and, like, woke up in her sleeping bag with a moose, like, sniffing her face. And it said, like, the antler span was, like, bigger than her whole body. And it's, like, it's still, like, it still freaks me out to think about it. And she told me the story, like, 20 years ago, but it was, like, totally, totally amazing. That thing just kind of sniffed her and walked away. But it's, like, they're, like, monsters. They're, like, massive, massive, monstrous, beautiful, crazy, like, wicked cool animals.
Outward Bound, isn't that thing where, like, a dog, a moose, a cow, and, like, a chicken, like, make their way home after getting lost, like, many states away? Isn't that what
Outward... Exactly what you're talking about. You're thinking about The Incredible Journey, John Gentile.
Actually, I'm thinking about the ripoff Homeward Bound, of the Incredible Journey ripoff. What's Outward Bound? I don't even know what that is.
You know, it's, like, one of these, like Knowles. Have you ever heard of Knowles? I don't know. Maybe you're not like an adventure hippie. But
a Knowles is like a brownie or a pixie, I think.
No, Knowles is like, there are these like programs where you can, like, teenagers can go and it's supposed to, like, develop character and a little bit of grit, and they, like, go on these, like, pretty tough, like, backpacking experiences.
But I've never heard of that ever.
Gosh.
Yeah, well, you know, I definitely, like, I have one foot in, like, the adventure hippie world, because I love hiking, and I love all that stuff. I used to lead backpacking and canoeing trips, so, like, I know it makes sense to me that you maybe have not heard about that. I'm sorry I referenced it like it was something that everyone's heard of. I just thought it was. I'm now realizing that, no, this is something that I only know because I used to do this shit.
Homeward, oh, no, wait, the Incredible Journey is Homeward Bound. It's the same thing.
Oh.
I was wrong. I thought Homeward Bound was a ripoff of Incredible Journey, but it's the same movie. I've never actually seen it.
But I, like, why change the name? Like, what's so wrong with Incredible Journey? They're like, no, we can make this better. It's going to be Homeward Bound.
Well, we are podcast bound. And before I get into that, a couple of things. First of all, on Monday, November 14th, I'm going to be in L.A., as is Brad Logan, as is Black Dahlia. And me and Brad are going to read from Architects of Self-Destruction, The Oral History of Leftover Crack. And Black Dahlia is going to read from his brand new book, Highland Falls. And Brad's going to play some music. And Blag is going to play some music. And I'm going to interview them both. And Brad and Brad are going to play some music together. And it's going to be a real good time. That's going to be at the Last Bookstore from 6 to 8 o'clock in L.A. And it's free. So come on out. It's going to be a real good time. Also, and more, you don't really do Discogs, do you?
I do not do Discogs very often, but I should.
Hallie Bullitt, you don't really do Discogs, do you?
Nope.
Well, in the words of Ronnie James Dio, watch out! Because there are, literally within the past 10 days or so, there are many, 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 many scam accounts that have popped up that are selling very rare punk records for far below market value. And people are getting zapped right and left. So if you were a Discogs person and you see something that seems too good to be true, it probably is too good to be true. One way you can tell is, A, do they have no feedback? Are they a new seller? Another thing is, are they selling a bunch of disparate records that you wouldn't think one person would have and they're all very rare? Third thing, and I've seen this with a lot of the scammers, which suggests to me that it's it's input by computer. Like it'll be a bunch of rare disparate records, but they'll all have the exact same condition, you know, good plus or VG plus, and there's no like variation in between there. So watch out, because there are as with everything technological, and tech people are always like, oh, technology is so great, it's awesome. It's awesome for about the first 4 or 5 years, and then it just goes to a shit show and makes everyone's life so much worse. So I fear that Discogs is on that precipice now, because literally within the past 10 days, a whole bunch of scammers have popped up. So in the words of Ronnie James Dio, as I said, watch out. However, I'm just going to brag here. I love Discogs, and I'm not dissing Discogs. I like Discogs a lot. But don't forget about your local record store, because today I was at Sit and Spin Records in Philadelphia. And M. Moore, do you know what I got? And there's no way you could guess, because there are literally millions of records. Do you know what I got at Sit and Spin Records today for $29.99?
A first press of Holy Diver by Ronnie James Dio.
Close. A test press of Culture Shock's 1987 album, Onward and Upward.
Oh, that's
test press. $29.99. So listen, people. 1987 album. So listen, people. Don't forget about your local record store. I know Discogs is cool. I know people like eBay and Amazon, even though Amazon is evil, but you know Discogs is all right. Go to your local record store, people. There are jewels and gems and secrets to be had there.
That's a cool find, John.
It is funny, told me, like, look at this record I got. And everyone's like, wow, that's so cool. Congratulations. Like, well, I didn't do anything. I mean, Dick Lucas made the record. I just bought it, you know. There's like a Seinfeld routine that really isn't that funny, but it's about like how if someone compliments you on your shirt, like you didn't make the shirt, you know. But at any rate, go to your local record store, people. There's cool stuff there. Anyways, let's get today's show started. We've got a little bit of a shorter episode this week, and you know, just because well, that's the way it is sometimes. Not a lot of crazy news this week.
It ends up being a super long episode.
I know. Indeed. All right. Oh, big news, though. Big news, people. This is all we're talking about this episode. Rudimentary Peni have re-released Cacophony, my favorite Rudimentary Peni album. Of course, this is not a surprise, and it's not unexpected. Sealed Records in the UK has been, I don't know if slowly, but I guess regularly reissuing Rudimentary Peni records. They've reissued Death Church. They've reissued the EP, and maybe that's just it so far. And now they've released Cacophony, which is the second, and if you ask me, best Rudimentary Peni album. The album is the most intense Rudimentary Peni album, and the one that preceded their first breakup, if you will, and also preceded Nick Blinko getting put in a mental institution. Very briefly, Rudimentary Peni is three guys. Nick Blinko is the singer and guitar player, and not the only songwriter, but probably the main songwriter. And Cacophony is a masterpiece of an album. It's 30 tracks, but it's really like 50 tracks. And it's all these tiny little songs welded together. And they're all about H.P. Lovecraft, or Blinko sings from the perspective of H.P. Lovecraft. And throughout the record, he mixes his identity with H.P. Lovecraft. And sometimes he's singing as Nick Blinko. Sometimes he's singing as H.P. Lovecraft. Sometimes he's singing as a character from one of the songs. sometimes he's talking as a critic of H.P. Lovecraft. And the end of the album is so cool because the very last few tracks, Nick Blinko as H.P. Lovecraft, the whole thing with H.P. Lovecraft, he's considered one of the greatest horror writers of all time, one of the greatest writers of all time. But in his day, he really wasn't that celebrated whatsoever. And I guess you could compare that to Rudimentary Peni. But the second to last song is H.P. Lovecraft and Nick Blinko kind of combined as one character singing, like, I'm writing these words. I'm reaching out, and I hope someone or something out there hears these words. And then the very last thing is Cthulhu, kind of the big baddie from H.P. Lovecraft's work called Cthulhu, walks through the wall and, like, scares you, which is kind of cool. It's a pretty cool way to end the album. And then he just starts screaming black and gold for no reason. That's the end of the album. Anyway, the album is an absolute masterpiece. It has got so many twists and turns, and I'm glad Sealed Records are reissuing it. Sealed Records has been doing mostly straight reissues, that there's no bonus tracks, and if you buy the record, it looks pretty much like it did when you bought it in 1988. The only difference, I guess, is it's remastered by Arthur Rizik's. I think the Arthur Rizik's remasters are very good. I actually think I might like the Southern remasters better, but at any rate, it's great to have this back in press and people able to check it out, and it's cool. I do have limited criticism if you guys want to hear that, or if you guys want to comment on it, then go ahead.
I don't have a lot to say other than that, like, I'm not super familiar with this record, and it's awesome. It's awesome. I'm glad to know more of the story of it, because I wasn't getting that, but it really, from the first couple of bars, it really grabs you. It's like, definitely, I didn't need you to tell me that this is, like, considered one of their masterpieces for me to, like, figure that out. I was like, oh, this album is amazing. Yeah, it's cool. It's cool that people that, you know, want it pressed on vinyl can get it.
I'm glad but you dug it.
I would be interested to hear your criticism.
My criticism is only the following, in that, to me, Rudimentary Peni is one of the most important bands of all time. They are so unlike anybody. I mean, they're punk-ish or punk, but the lyrics are so like anybody else. The concept on the records is often so high concept, and it's so well done. But while Nick Blinko has severe mental health issues, or had severe mental health issues, he takes them head on and addresses those in the song. And we can see the perspective of someone that we often could not see the perspective of. And it's not a put on. Like on a lot of records, people like saying, oh, I'm crazy, I'm losing my mind, when really they're just some high school kid. But Nick Blinko was committed to a mental institution after this record against his will. And so to me, these are some of the most unique and greatest records of all time. My only criticism, and it's easy for me to say this, is these records should be celebrated and cherished and pointed out. This is an important record. You all need to pay attention to this. Sealed Records, which is a label that I liked, it's a sub-label of La Vida Sin Luz, who put a lot of cool stuff. They kind of just put it out, and I wonder, are they just putting it out because they're a very, quote, punk label? And, you know, it's maximum rock and roll style punk. There's this weird thing, or I don't know if it's weird, but there's this perspective where it's like, don't say that you're special. No one's special. You know, if you say you're special, that's not punk. That, you know, it's not cool to kind of, like, really say something's great. Just act like it's no big deal, even if it is, because you don't want to draw attention to yourself or something. And so La Vida Sin Luz just put these on out. I kind of wish they had done a blast to New York Times. I wish they had done a blast to whoever and said, we are reissuing this seminal record. Everyone needs to pay attention to it, and let's make a big deal out of it. And they really just kind of put it out, you see. Now, maybe that's what Blinko wants, or maybe they don't have the funds, or even maybe the experience, although I think they must, to like kind of get publications to pay attention and say, this is a big friggin' deal. I just hope they're not making the decision to just quietly put it out to, you know, to quote, stay cult when I feel as though this record is more deserving of a greater spotlight, if you will. Black and gold, black and gold. And more, what do you think of this?
I really like this album. I think it's great. I do agree. I think more people should listen to it and be made aware of its presence and stuff, because there's so many like just really, really cool stuff. Like Sulu's everywhere. He has a chia pet now you can buy. Like, it's absolutely everywhere, and a lot of people don't know or don't connect. Lovecraft and like the Necronomicon and like all this kind of stuff. So it's really cool to have like all this really awesome like horror stuff with like rudimentary peni, and it's just like everything just rocks. So yeah, more people should listen to it, more people should know about it. And yeah, it did seem weird that it was just sort of like a really like quiet release, like just like, hey, here, it's here. If you're looking, you'll find it. If you're not looking, you won't know about it. Like, I did find that kind of strange.
Like, there's, I would say, probably three records that you could argue are the most seminal rudimentary peni records, unless you include the EPs of RP. Obviously, Death Church, which they did sort of make a big deal out of, but didn't make a huge deal out of it. Cacophony, which I think is the most important and most craziest one and most challenging one. And then Pope Adrian the 37th, which is by far the weirdest and most far out one. And so to not make a big deal out of it and just kind of put it out seems like a missed opportunity, because, you know, Blinko's like 65. How many more reissues is he going to get? And, you know, maybe I mean, Blinko's an unusual guy, and he was a recluse for a long time. And as a side note, he actually was just cited out at lunch with Justin Dwyer of Philadelphia's band Northern Liberties, which was kind of cool. At any rate, I don't know how much of a recluse Blinko is now. But and maybe he doesn't want any attention, but I would and maybe he doesn't. But if he does, it would be a shame to lose this chance to give him some positive attention, is what I'm saying.
But everybody go listen to this now.
There you go. Here's something else everyone is going to listen. This is something that did blow up all over the internet and everyone is talking about. System of a Down is headlining Sick New World Fest. That's going to be May 13, 2023. Korn's playing. The Deftones are playing. Incubus is playing. Evanescence. Papa Roach. So it's your chance to see all the worst bands of the 90s in one space. However, there also are some cool bands playing. Body Count's playing, the Melvins is playing, Scowl's playing, Ministry's playing, Turnstile, I'm not a fan, but you know, people dig them. Killing Joke is playing. So it's kind of a weird thing. It's like bad 90s music and some good 80s bands too, and a very few awesome new bands. And so the whole thing definitely is pitched as like a 90s thing. But I guess they're kind of bringing in the 80s thing to kind of broaden the appeal, and the new thing to – well, here's what's interesting. Actually, here's what's interesting about this. So this is put on by the same people that do that. What was the festival that just happened? Not Brave New World Festival.
When We Were Young.
When We Were Young Festival. It's the same exact investors and everything. And so much like When We Were Young, this is not some guy that says, wouldn't it be cool if I put on a 90s festival? It is a bunch of investors that have very systematically and scientifically determined the acts that will bring in the maximum amount of dollars that they can do for one day. Again, there's a million bands playing in one day, which is crazy. And so this is very corporate. And not that that's the worst thing in the world, but we'll talk about that in a second. But it is amazing at how precise and accurate these investors are becoming at making music festivals that can really bring in a whole bunch of money that are almost retro festivals. But here's why this is really interesting to me. Without the marketing, without the pedigree of When We Were Young Fest, and more, what do you think System of a Down, Korn, Deftones, and Incubus is? Like, what kind of festival is that? That's the county fair. You know what I mean? But somehow now that it's Sick New World and they put on like this kind of 90s-ish paste like on the font, it's like now a $400, $500 festival, whereas if this was pitched in a different way, it'd be the county fair. You know, maybe not System of a Down, but Korn and Incubus, that's county fair these days. I'm not trying to be a jerk, but that's the truth. So what is interesting that the marketing people behind this are so advanced at their craft, they're able to take a county fair band and make it a $400, $500 ticket. That being said, I love the Melvins. I love Scowl. I like Sisters of Mercy. I like Body Count. I like Killing Joke. But I'm not going to go to this because there's too many bands in one day. So every band plays for, what, 30 minutes? And frankly, I don't really want to give my money to these people. And more, what do you think of this fest?
Yeah, it was like the same as like When We Were Young, kind of like the nostalgia vampires are back. Like they just want to like get all the cash. I did think like some When We Were Young bands were really cool, but this is a big no for me. I like System of a Down. They're really cool. I hate Korn with a burning passion. I probably know Incubus songs, but I can't think about them right, like think of them off the top of my head. Evanescence is high up on the bill, which is yay, that's good. I only know one song. But Yeah, like it is. It's just, it's way too much to try to do in one day and fit in everything. And, you know, when you're trying to fit in everything, you're going to see bands that you really don't want to see. And it's just going to turn into like this big kind of shit show. So like there are really cool bands like Johnny said, Scowl and like Kitty, Machine Girl, like all sorts of really cool stuff. It is really weird how it's, oh yeah, here's all of the older bands and stuff, and then here have like Scene Queen, who's just like super new and doing like bimbo core and like everything, just there you go, and it just, nothing seems to fit well. So I don't really know if it was just we can't find enough bands that sound like Korn who want to do this, and we're just gonna kind of fill in with like people who are kind of sort of in it. It does kind of feel like they're trying to rip off Knotfest a little bit too, but we'll see how popular Sick New World is. Hallie, are you booking your ticket?
This festival is so funny, right? It's like the mostly terrible, somewhat great festival. It's so odd, and I never thought like I'd see like Turnstile playing with like Mr. Bungle. Like that made me laugh so hard. Mr. Bungle. That's such like a specific 90s. You know who I feel like is missing from this? John, help me out. I'm just having like I'm having like a brain fart right now. Who was Les Claypool the singer of?
Oh, Primus.
Yeah, like don't you feel like Primus is missing from this festival?
I would actually argue that Primus and some bands aren't quite stupid and trashy enough. Like Chevelle, like really Chevelle, you know, Papa Roach, like really, you know.
I know Primus is definitely smarter than these bands, but like I don't know, it's the Mr. Bungle thing. I don't know. That's just like a very specific kind of guy that I went to college with that listened to Mr. Bungle. Yeah,
nerdy guy with a goatee and a fedora.
Yeah. And I was like definitely not expecting Scowl to be playing with like Hoobastank. I mean the whole thing is so
Oh, Hoobastank's on this? Yeah, oh my yeah. God. That is too perfect. That is too
really wild, you guys. It's just really, really wild. At the same time, like you know, I wouldn't pay that much money to see it because the bands that I like that are on this bill, I could see them on other bills with either just go see them. Or I could go see them on a festival where I like just a much higher percentage of the bands. But I don't know, like if I could somehow go to this for free, like I think it would be a total lark. Like I think it'd be hilarious. I think it, you know, like, and you could see some stuff. I mean, there's enough bands on this list that I could definitely keep myself occupied and happy and like eat some funnel cake and be like, yeah. But no, I would like not pay a lot of money for this much garbage on one festival. You.
Plus, you can see Monster Magnet. You can see Stabbing Westward. You can see, let's see here, Alien Ant Farm, Seven Dust, POD. Oh, man.
Was like, Alien Ant Farm the Michael Jackson cover? Was that?
Yeah.
And the guy that shaved the middle of his head. You remember he went down the middle of his head? But I mean, you both have to admit that like it is impressive that these investors can take like POD and make it a $500 festival. Right, like that's really impressive from a not from a moral or artistic standpoint, but from a money standpoint. You know what I mean?
Now, oh yeah.
Did you rag on the We Were Young festival when I was not on the podcast?
I'm sure we did.
Like, probably.
I want to go to that. You guys are you're poo pooing that.
When we were young, I am definitely poo pooing when we were young. You mean the new one or the old one?
The one that's happening in the spring.
Oh, with Green Day and Blink 182 and 5 Seconds of Summer and The Offspring and Good Charlotte and 30 Seconds to Mars and All Time Low and Pierce the Veil. Yeah, I'm definitely poo-pooing that one as well, for sure.
I think there are some better bands on that list, John.
when they have Rudimentary P&I reuniting, I'll be there. but until then, you all can see who is dank and
in its entirety.
when you all I was trying to be a smartass. Oh, Michelle Branch is playing that's funny. Wow, well anyways, listen man, It's we live in the world of chaos and regurgitation these days, and that's exactly what these festivals are. Here's something that's new and more. Tell us about Georgia Mac.
Yeah. Okay. So Georgia Mac is like the lead singer of Camp Cope. So if you like Camp Cope, you'll like her solo stuff. And she just now she's going to be releasing a new solo EP. It's called Live at Sydney Opera House, and it features 5 songs that were performed at the Sydney Opera House. And the first single from it has been released, and it's a cover of Regina Spektor's Samson. So, yeah, like, she has a great voice. I like her vibes. This song, I couldn't get through it because I found it so sad. I don't know, like, what it was. It was just, like, I liked how she sounded. I liked the piano. I liked all, like, everything that was going on. It's, like, into all the elements. And it was just, like, tried listening to it. And I was, like, oh, no, I'm going to cry. And then I was, like, okay, I'm going to stop it. I'm going to go, like, listen to something else. And then I was, like, okay, I'm going to come back to it. And then I was, like, nope, can't do it. Going to cry. So I don't know if it's, again, I'm not familiar with the original. I don't know if it's a sad song or if it's just, like, that's just my vibe today. But yeah, I am excited for it, and I am going to look or listen to it, I guess, when it comes out, the EP, because she released Joe Rogan, the single, last year, I believe, and it was really good. And in 2019, she released her album Pleaser, which is also really good. So yeah, what do you guys think of Georgia Mac's new song? Yeah. Okay, so, like, it is.
You get on this podcast. You just couldn't do it. It was too emotional for you.
Yeah.
I respect that. Music also gives me all the feels, so I'm with you. I liked this. I was like, all right, Georgia Mac, you can sing like that. Because, like, mm-hmm. I like Camp Cope, and I know that she can sing, but it's different when you're doing, like, a Regina Spektor song, right? Because she writes these songs with, like, these, it's like she's doing, like, vocal gymnastics, right? Like, there's so few people on earth that write songs like that, right? Like, since, like, Joni Mitchell, like, who writes songs where you have to, like, really, I mean, so it's cool. It's kind of cool to hear her do this. I mean, I didn't. You know, I'll be curious to know, like, what the, I mean, I think that's cool also that she plays the Sydney Opera House. Like, I guess I didn't realize how big Camp Cope and she is, but I don't know. I thought it was cool. It also was, like, it also just sounded, like, a lot like Regina Spektor, which is, like, I could also just go listen to Regina Spektor, but, I don't know, I was impressed. She can sing, dude. You definitely didn't hear this kind of vocal stylings on the Joe Rogan song.
No.
John, did you like this?
Too sad. I can't get into these, like, songs where it's, like, unrelenting sadness, and that's all there is to it. It just doesn't speak to me. It's like, It almost seems to make, like, a sadness pornographic in that it's like, are you actually expressing emotion, or are you just reveling in the concept of being sad? But maybe that's how powerful of a song it is. So, not my style. I'm more crazed insanity, a la Rudimentary Peni. And here is Night Gaunts off Cacophony by Rudimentary Peni. I invented ninjas from all directions, some endless scramble around the rim, I'm in the gold jumping, let me one more set, let me go down, 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 let me go down. Something that's more my style. Sloppy Seconds and Anti-Theater releasing a split 7-inch. Sloppy Seconds are releasing I don't even know why I posted this as a story. There's really not a whole lot to say here. Sloppy Seconds is an awesome band. The Split 7-inch is Thanks for the Memories by Sloppy Seconds and Anti-Scene. Fight Like Apes, Sweet Georgia Brown Remix. I don't love Anti-Scene. I do love Sloppy Seconds. Both these tracks are previously released. That is, there's nothing new here. So it's really more of a novelty than anything else. But I love Sloppy Seconds. And I wish they would release some new stuff. It's been like 15 years at this point. And I feel like they still have the goods, because their last album was their second best one after their first one, which is the best one, which is called Destroyed. I guess the only question here is, like, Hallie Bullet, do you enjoy these novelty style records? That is, there's really no purpose to having these except for to have it. Like, everyone already has these songs, and now they're together on 1/7-inch. You know, there's really no real point to it, except as a trinket. What's your perspective of that?
Like, yuck someone else's yum, because I'm sure there's somebody for whom this seems awesome and they're excited to have it, and like, I would never, like, and so like, great. So like, honestly, I mean that, like, great for them, but like, I there's something about it seems just like a little lame to me. Like, we're gonna put out these songs, like, both of which are already out. I don't know, it just seems like, oh, make to me, it just sort of feels like, make something new. Like, why don't you just make something new then, if you want to really put out like a cool 7-inch like picture disc, like make some new songs to throw on there. But again, like, if fans are excited about this and they want to buy it, like, it's not, you know what I mean? It's not like hurting me. You know, I don't have like a problem with it. But I don't know. It seems like, John, like, I don't. Like, do you think it's a little silly?
Yes, I did buy it because I love Sloppy Seconds, and I want every single thing Sloppy Seconds put out ever. We talked about this before with the Joe Strummer thing, where you had to rebuy the three Joe Strummer albums, and then you get a terrible demos album. The difference being is that was like $300, and this was like $15. So for $15, I'm like, fine. If it's $15 to maintain my collection, then I'll pay the $15. If it gets the band money, that's cool. If it gets the label money, that's cool too, because the label actually reissued. I mean, if this gets the label money, it's cool, because the label did reissue some long out of print Sloppy Seconds records, and they actually reissued some CD-only records as vinyl. They did a very nice job with it. That being said, I kind of wish they dug a little bit deeper, because there's a very rare Sloppy Seconds CD called Necrocomicon, and it was actually a promo-only CD that they gave out at some comic book convention or something, and it actually has a slew of rare Sloppy Seconds stuffs on it. So they could have done a 7-inch EP with, like, those tracks that had never been on record before, nobody has because it's a super limited CD. Just put those on a record. Like, why are we just putting, like, a song that everyone already has on record? So, yeah, I think it's a little lame. I'm not thrilled by it, but I got it because, you know, I love Sloppy Seconds. I'm with you, Hallie Bullet. I know you love pop punk. Do you love Sloppy Seconds?
I like Sloppy Seconds. I wouldn't say I love Sloppy Seconds.
Fair.
It's like a little, like, some of the lyrics are like a little kind of goofy to me, you know, or like, you know, trying to be shocking, and I don't find them shocking. You know what I mean? Like, it there's something, but they're catchy as fuck. And like, I do. Yeah. So I would say I like them, but don't love them.
If the listeners don't know Sloppy Seconds, the first record, Destroyed, I think is one of the best, quote, pop punk records ever. It's like the catchiest, like, every track is, to me, a 9 or 10 out of 10 catchy banger, and most of them are pretty funny. The other records are very good, not as great. The live record's real good, and more.
Yes.
What do you think of trinkets like this? And what do you think about Sloppy Seconds? Do you not care, or do you enjoy? And also, and more, yes. Are you sad that lead singer B.A. has now lost literally like 150 pounds? So where famously Sloppy Seconds were all big guys, now B.A. is a skinny little guy. Does that upset you? Because being big guys was so much a part of their image for literally 40 years or 30 years. 40 years!
Oh, no. Did everyone, no one else, like, jump ship? Everyone else is the same?
Well, the biggest guy left the band a long time ago, so now there's two normal for Americans, and B.A., who used to be a really chunky guy, he's now a skinny little twig because he literally lost 150 pounds or something like that.
Why? Like, is he healthy? Is he okay? Did he do it, like, did he do it on purpose?
I will tell you, nothing weird or nothing crazy, maybe not my reason to say. I mean, he actually did talk about it on Facebook, so I'm not blowing up. All right, he talked about it on Facebook. Health reasons, he said.
Oh,
he said
okay.
That on Facebook, so.
Well, that's good. Everyone do whatever you gotta do to, like, feel healthy and stuff. Good for him. I think that's great. For this, it's kind of like, why don't you do something new or at least do a cover or like do something kind of fun instead of, yeah, like the song everyone knows you for or like just a remix of
the song. I will defend the band. I actually don't think this was the band's idea. I think it was the label's idea. So I don't think it's fair to say, Sloppy Seconds, how dare you do this? I think you could say, label, why don't you try harder, if you will, you know?
I'm a firm label, why don't you try harder? Sloppy Seconds are a band that I've never really, gotten into. It's like, I've heard a couple other songs, like, on, like, Around and stuff, and it's like, yeah, I don't mind it, but I'm not going back to it. And then, like, same with Anti-Scene, pretty much the same.
Nothing against them. I always confuse Anti-Scene with, like, Gigi Allen. Like, how people, like, did Anti-Scene used to be connected with Gigi Allen somehow?
Oh, did they?
I remember. And what's funny is, like, when I was, like, looking, I had to remind me, like, I know them. Like, I know Anti-Scene. Like, I know, I think I probably even saw them back in the day. But, like, I couldn't, like, I never liked them. It was, like, suddenly I was, like, wait a minute. I was confusing them with other bands. Like, I had to look up and remind myself who they were. I will say that the title of this song really made me laugh. But then what's the title of the song in this? They have Sweet Georgia Brown remix. It's like so funny. So ridiculous. What was the question?
My question was Anti-Scene associated with Gigi Allen? And yes, they did back up Gigi Allen on some albums or live dates or something like that. You know, not that I care about Gigi Allen, because I really don't care. The Gigi Allen discography is so scattered and mixed up. It's hard to figure out exactly what was going on, but it looks like he was backed by Anti-Scene for some live recordings and maybe even some studio recordings. So there you go. If you ever want a real eye opener, there's a Gigi Allen. It's really just a live DVD. And if you watch it, it will let you know every single thing you need to know about Gigi Allen in one scene. And I don't know if Hallie Bullitt knows what I'm referring to, but it explains everything. At any rate, here's something
Can I interrupt to say I'm such a dum-dum because I was actually talking about Adjacent Festival, not the We Were Young Festival. Because they both are kind of going for that like early 2000s nostalgia thing, but Adjacent is a way better festival. So yes, you're right. Yeah. Sorry. You can go ahead and you can go ahead and take a big crap on the other festival. That's fine.
No, listen, Adjacent, now we're talking. Adjacent Festival, off. Jeff Rosenstock. Let's see, who else? Soul Glow, Zulu, Gel. Now we're talking, people. Linda's. Now we're talking, people.
It's going to be good. Yeah. Pussy, Japanese Breakfast, Trans Stuff. Yeah. It's going to be a good festival. It's really expensive, but I'm trying to think if I can, like, turn it into like a birthday thing for my husband or something where I can justify spending that much money on like
weekends. Let's see, what does it cost here? I'm looking right now. This is Jason Festival we're talking about. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo. Wow, actually it's not that expensive. It's $360. That's a lot of money. You know what I mean? But for 2 days,
so expensive.
Punk Rock Bowling, $180 for 3 days. Can't argue with that. But it is kind of crazy how like. It's funny how, like, independent music is still dirt cheap, $12, $15, $10. And then, like, mainstream festivals. And it's funny how, like, Adjacent Festival, like, it's not even, like, Blink-182, obviously, is mainstream. But, like there's a lot of, like, not that mainstream artists on here. Like we said, Off is not mainstream, you know. Linda's isn't really mainstream. Mannequin Pussy isn't mainstream. So it is interesting how, like, how expensive festivals are these days. And it's interesting, like, festivals now have payment plans, and I gotta say, if you're going to a festival that has a payment plan, then it's probably overpriced, frankly. You know, like a payment plan for a festival, you know, but
I thought about the payment plan. I mean, truthfully, it's probably just a little too much money. I just, like, can't quite justify. But I don't know. I think about it. I do really want to go. I legitimately want to go to this thing.
Jeff Rosenstock, mainstream or still underground? What's the vote?
As far as punk goes, I'd say that's pretty mainstream now, right?
Yeah. I'd agree.
Okay, well, there's your answer. Jeff Rosenstock is made for people.
Let's put it this way. His name is the same sized font as Midtown, Thursday, and Motion City Soundtrack. So to me, that means you're mainstream, right?
And almost as big as Coheed and Cambria. Emor, speaking of mainstream, tell us about Big Joni.
Yeah, so this is a band that are really, really good. And should be, well, they have been getting more, like, press lately, which is really exciting. They're from the UK, and they just released a lyric video for Your Words. So that was the final single from Back Home, their album, which is out now, so like you can go listen to it. All the singles sounded a little different, which I really enjoyed. I haven't checked out the full album yet, but hopefully, well, not hopefully, I am going to be doing that soon, because I like what I've heard so far, and I like this this song a lot. It's really cool because the way that it is, it makes you focus on the lyrics and kind of the depth of the lyrics instead of just like, oh, we're doing this really cool thing, like guitar wise, like they are doing like really cool things guitar wise, but it's not just like that. The song is the vessel for like my 15-minute guitar solo. It's we're going to play, but we want you to focus on the lyrics and we want you to focus on the deeper meaning behind everything. So I really like when bands and artists do that, because you feel more of a connection and you get more out of it, right? The lyric video too, like it ends with embroidered artwork by Angelica Ellis, and that is really, really cool. It's just like, how can you do that? It's so just phenomenal. So I'm really looking forward to checking out the album. What did you guys think of the last single from Big Joni?
I liked the song a lot. I really felt like it stood up to like a lot of like some of the greatest like new wave like songwriting that I used to like. I thought it was really nice. I wasn't totally sold on the vocals for some reason. I just wasn't sure. I don't need to say more than that. I wasn't sure I was sold on the vocals, but I thought like the song itself and the like all the instruments, everything. I liked 90% of what was being offered here. John, were you into this?
I thought it was cool. I really dug the sounds. I'm surprised to hear you call it new wave. I don't know if it sounded new wave to me. If anything, I thought it sounded maybe like kind of post-punk, which I guess is splitting hairs. But I dug how it was sort of purposely repetitive. I think the vocals were interesting in that, like, you usually don't hear these kinds of vocals against this kind of music. I liked it. I didn't love it. Here's what else we have on the docket for today. Oh, last thing. This is something actually I did like a lot. Gina Birch of the Raincoats is putting out a new LP. She released a video called Wish I Was You. And honestly, it kind of sounds Raincoatish. It's out on Third Man Records. It's kind of far out sounding, very post-punkish, but the lyrics themselves are very direct and very simple. It's something, and I actually like the lyrics a whole lot, and it's something that I think a lot of modern artists don't have, that a lot of the punk bands really did perfect, and that it's a very simple, on its face, almost banal statement, but then when sung in this context, it's actually like super interesting and clever. One of my favorite references in regards to what I'm talking about is like the Slits have a song called Number One Enemy, and the lyrics are, I want to be your number one enemy, and like that's the whole lyrics, and it's like that line in of itself isn't maybe that clever, but this song is amazing, and the way Ari Up delivers it makes it amazing. I thought this kind of had the same thing. I really like the lyrics. It's like, I used to wish I was you, now you wish you were me, or the lyrics or something like that, and I thought it was very cool, clever, and sounded good. My only criticism here is the vocals, like Hallie was saying in the last track, to me, the vocals seem to be mixed so low I could barely hear Gina. I don't know why they mix them that way. Like, I could barely hear the vocals. Hallie, did you experience that, and what did you think of the song?
You know, it's funny. I'd have to listen to it again. It didn't bother me when I listened to it. I loved this. I thought it was so good. I liked everything about it. I loved the song. I thought the video was cool. quirky, jerky, crazy. I was super into it, like weird dancing. This is some of the weirder dancing I've seen in a video. And like, and I'm a modern dancer, so I can like get down with some weird dancing. And I don't know, I just liked that she was just, you know, she put some younger people in the video, but she's unapologetically herself and her age and not even particularly trying to dress super cool, just kind of dressing the way she dresses. And thought there was something just super, super punk about it, honestly. It was cool. I really, really, really like this. I feel like you must have liked this as much as I did. Yeah.
Oh, it was great. Yeah. No, it was great. I love the song, and the video was just like, there's dancing, there's a cool meter, there's like so much going on. It's just fun and fits the song, and it's great. And it starts with someone screaming, and it's just like, yep, same. That's where I'm at. I did find too that, yeah, like the vocals were mixed down a little bit, which I was kind of surprised at. But then I was like, is it intentional? Is it like you have to kind of like really listen for things? And I was like, oh, am I just overthinking it? But like, it was really good song. There's guitar from Thurston Moore in it too, which is really cool. I'm really looking forward to the album. I'm glad there's going to be more.
Well, there you have it. That is Gina of the Raincoats, and she's got a new album coming. Well, oh, is that Third Man again?
Yeah,
man, that's pretty cool. Third Man's putting that out. You know, I'm not like a White Stripes mega fan. I'm not even really a fan, but Jack White does some cool stuff, man.
Yeah.
At any rate, so let's listen to that, and we'll come back and we'll wrap this one up. So this is Gina doing Wish I Was You, but now you wish you were me.
Like to be me. I am with the coolest.
were back, and everybody wishes they were me because I will be in LA on November 14, reading from the award-winning, worldwide famous, massive selling, best book of 2021 and 2022. It didn't come out this year, but it's still the best book of the year, Architects of Self-Destruction. Come on down to the last bookstore in LA. And otherwise, Hallie Boyle, anything you want the listeners to know or check out in the upcoming week?
Oh man, I'm like loving this band. I'm like a little, like a little late on this one because I think this album that I'm loving so much, I think came out in the spring. But I'm loving this band, Weird Nightmare. Do you guys know Weird Nightmare?
Yeah, the guy from Mets.
Yeah, the guy from Mets, which I'm like, I'm a huge Mets fan. I'm seeing Archers of Loaf in like a couple of weeks, and so Weird Nightmare is opening up for Archers of Loaf, and so I was like, oh well, then I gotta check out this band and figure out if I like normally I'll go check out the opener, but just the way my schedule is that day, I was like, well, if I check them out and I don't like them, then I'll just skip them and just show up for Archers. And then I listened to them and I was like, fuck, now I definitely have to make it to this show in time to see them. So I've just been listening to that all week. I think that band's amazing. Yeah, I would say, like, I feel like they sound like maybe, like, Guided by Voices meets Mets meets, I don't know, can you think of, like, what you think they sound like?
There's definitely, like, Mets, like, element to it. It's just good.
Okay. Yeah, really good.
If you like cool, kind of weird, noisy stuff, like, you're gonna love it.
Yeah. I'm curious to know what John would think about it. It might be like a little too, like, not a little too, like, I feel like, because I definitely feel like there's like some 90s,
oh yeah,
indie, like, sensibility thrown in there. So anyhow, John, if you have time, check out Weird Nightmare. Tell me what you think.
I will listen. And more, anything you want the listeners to know until next week?
Yeah, two really cool bands that I've found out recently. One was recommended to me, and the other one I just kind of like found on the internet. So first one, Ultra Love. They're out of Ottawa. They do really, really cool shit. Check them out. They have a self-titled EP out now, and they have a demo, and both are awesome. And Unsanitary Napkin, they are anarcho-punk from Australia, and they're really, really good. So I would check them out. And also support workers, and if you can, like, help them out on the picket line, help them out. Don't cross picket line. Don't be scab.
And yeah. We'll see you next week. Don't be scab.